Long distance calls in the 70s and 80s sounded completely different than they do now. This is what the phone company called the next best thing to being there. It predates the sounds like you're right next door, you can hear a pin drop type sound that we deal with now, and further predates the new sound of long distance, which many voice-over internet providers have.
Which basically uses compression schemes that make you sound like the morphing walrus from hell.
Due to the increasing use of these compression schemes as if they didn't matter, it may well be that the current sound of long distance is the highest quality that we will ever see over telephones. But back to the 1970s sound, this has a certain charm to it. The frequency response isn't as high, but there's a warmth to it.
This is a recording. The number you have reached is not in service at this time. If you think you might have dialed incorrectly, please try your call again.
And also you can feel the distance.
May I repeat? The number you have reached is not a working number. Thank you.
Because the carrier systems that were used, L carrier and microwave carrier, added a certain white noise that you could sort of tell was an accumulation of noise sources at every repeater point, and it just had a charm that can't be matched. That was a typical call to centralized intercept. And I have a tape of calls like that, made from New York to Bell System cities in the United States and Canada in February 1977. I'll be weaving that tape through this entire series, because centralized intercept is a very good way to showcase the sound of the old long-distance network. The voices on the recordings and talking to the operator who comes on afterward are extremely useful for demonstrating what it sounds like to talk on long-distance, although actually a completed call was a little quieter than that because when the party you called answered, the carrier noise would reduce a bit. But you still get the voice over long distance sound, and since I didn't know any living people to call in all of these cities, centralized intercept showcases the old network quite well. So you'll be hearing the centralized intercept tape in part one of this presentation. Part two will be something different from that, though still long distance. Centralized intercept was fairly simple. Generally, non-working numbers would all go to centralized intercept in Bell System cities. The changed numbers would go to operator intercept, where an operator would answer and say, "What number are you calling?" You'd tell her the number, and then she would either look it up or key it into a computer terminal and tell you the report on it, give you the new number if there was one. Numbers that were disconnected or had never been assigned in the first place went to machine intercept. Typically, you would hear ringtone until the centralized recorded announcement answered. It would play from 1 to 3 times and then cut through to an operator who could check the number. Each city tended to have a fairly unique recording that, in many cases, stayed around for a while. Those of you who played with the phone in the 70s may remember the particular centralized intercept recording for your area. Here are just some quick examples. New Jersey Bell, up until sometime in 1975, had this one.
I'm sorry. The number you have dialed has either been disconnected or not assigned. If you think you could have dialed incorrectly, please try again. Thank you. My voice has been recorded.
Southern California had this one.
The number you have reached is not in service at this time, and there is no new number. Please be sure you have checked the telephone directory for the right number and are dialing correctly. This is a recording.
Washington, D.C., prior to a time in 1975, had this one.
I'm sorry. The number you have called is not a working number. Please check the number before dialing again. This is a recording.
And then there was the infamous Atlanta recording from 1970.
Excuse me, it's about your call that did not go through. The number you have dialed has probably been disconnected. However, if you wish to verify this report, you may stay on the line and an operator will assist you. If you think you could have dialed incorrectly, please try your call again. This is a recording.
By the way, that recording was part of a Bell System experiment, and they were always very careful the way they did things, where they were trying out different ways of doing recordings to see if a more friendly, casual approach would help people to pay attention. As part of this experiment, they chose two cities, Atlanta and Chicago, to try it out. Here's the Chicago counterpart to the Atlanta recording.
Excuse me. It's about your call that did not go through. The number you dialed has probably been disconnected. If you wish to verify this report, you may stay on the line and an operator will assist you. If you think you could have dialed incorrectly, please try your call again. This is a recording.
You know, that actually sounds reasonable, as read by that announcer. But in Atlanta, the Bell system got more than they bargained for when the lady picked up the copy and read it in that sassy style. And actually, that ended up prompting a rather stern phone call, which I actually have a copy of. Now, this is, I didn't record this, so the quality isn't very good, so you'll have to bear with me on this, but here is the phone call that went through to Atlanta after the people at AT&T actually heard the way she had announced that experimental recording.
Line two.
Excuse me, it's about your recording.
The recording.
Please disconnect it.
Disconnected.
Disconnect your recording.
Whatever.
Okay, that was totally bogus. I apologize for that. I don't know what got into me, editing 30-year-old recordings to make it sound as if they're talking to each other. I'm not sure what that says about me, but... 2 o'clock. Okay, let's go on.
Whatever.
Now, one of the things that made the long-distance network so interesting was the whole concept and plan of routing. At the time, this was a major fascination for myself and Ben and Bill. Bill wasn't a part of our little group Bell clique, but he was our inspiration about the long-distance network structure and routing, because he understood it. And in those days, of course, it was a different world, because each tandem switch in the system had to make its own routing decisions without knowing what was going on in the rest of the network. There was a central control center that could send out orders to modify routing based on stuff that they were observing, but for the most part, the tandems were on their own, and the only thing they knew was whether their own trunk groups to various places were busy or available. So a hierarchical routing scheme was set up so that as each tandem made its best guess, based on whether trunks were busy or not, everything would work smoothly. The hierarchical system was kind of fascinating. It had 5 ranks, or levels, and the phone company made it very easy to observe this hierarchy in action for 2 reasons. Number one, every switch in the long-distance network had a numerical ID at the end of the recordings for when calls did not complete.
Will you please hang up and try again? This is a recording. 6074.
Place emergency calls with your operator. This is a recording. 21315.
Vanessa, it's always a street. Just a street.
That certainly caught our ears. And secondly, as the call set up, you could actually hear it being connected link by link in a serial fashion. So between the recording IDs and hearing the call set up, you could tell how the call was going through. Later on, I'm actually going to let you in on just what it was we were hearing. And it was actually quite simple. It was sort of like learning a new language in a way, because each tandem type made its own particular sound as it made the connection. Now, at the top of the hierarchy were tandem switches which were responsible for large regions of the United States and Canada. There were only 12 of these regional centers, also called Class 1 offices, and each of these was at the top of the homing chain for its particular region. In 1976-77, the 12 regional centers were Dallas,
2141,
Wayne, Pennsylvania,
2151,
Denver,
0031.
I'm not going to say the name of the next city, but it's in Saskatchewan.
3061.
St. Louis.
3141.
What the?
Please check the number and dial again or ask your operator for assistance. This is a recording.
How can anybody sound like that? Anyway, then there was Rockdale.
4041.
Which was in Conyers, Georgia. Pittsburgh.
4121.
Montreal. San Bernardino.
7141.
There was a switch in Norway, Illinois.
8151.
Then there was White Plains, New York.
9141.
And Sacramento.
9161.
As you can see, the recording ID numbers for the regional centers were made up of the area code where the switch was located, plus the digit 1. Now, just under the regionals in rank were the Class 2 offices, also called sectional centers. For example, way down in San Antone, there's a sectional center. Let's talk to her right now.
5122.
Yes, ma'am. Is this the sectional center?
I'm sorry. I'm busy now.
Hello?
Will you call again later, please?
Oh, boy. Okay, let me enunciate that carefully. Sectional center. Anyway, there were a lot more sectional centers in the network than regionals, of course. As an example of this, just within the White Plains, New York
9141
region, the sections were headed by Springfield, Mass.
4132
Albany, New York
5182
Newark
2012
New Haven
2032
and Suffolk
5162
which was in Dix Hills, Long Island. Then there was Boston
6172 6173
and New York
2122 2123
Boston and New York each had two sectional centers because these places, along with Chicago, were so large that it was necessary to put two tandems side by side to share the load. In Boston, Chicago, and New York, the two sectional centers complemented each other to make one super tandem. So the recording IDs ending in 2 were used for Class 2 or sectional centers. Recording IDs ending in 3 were only used in the rare case where a second sectional center was required in the same NPA. And until 4Es started coming in, Boston, Chicago, and New York were the only case of that, except for the 714 area of California, which was so geographically large that it was divided into two sections, one centered in Anaheim,
7142,
and the other in San Diego,
7143.
Next were the Class 3 offices. Typically, under each section, there would be a bunch of those. For example, under the auspices of Springfield, Mass,
4132.
There was Providence, Rhode Island,
4016.
Portland, Maine,
2077.
White River Junction, Vermont,
location 8024.
And
Manchester, New Hampshire, 6034.
Couldn't have said it better myself. As you can guess, the recording IDs ending in FOA or above were reserved for Class 3s, but they were also used for Class 4s, which were the lowest-ranking tandem offices. These didn't all have recording IDs. Many of them didn't even have recordings, and you just got or but some did. An example of a Class 4 office that did have a recording with an ID was Rochester, New York.
71610.
Now Rochester homed on Buffalo.
7164.
Which homed on Albany.
5182.
Which homed on White Plains.
9141.
And that homing information was important in deciding what the route would be, because if you were calling Rochester from any point in the U.S., you would route it according to that particular layout. Let's say you were trying to call Rochester from Atlanta.
4042.
Well, the first choice would be to go directly to Rochester.
71610.
But if either all the circuits were busy, or there weren't any direct Rochester circuits due to insufficient interest to justify them, the next choice would be Buffalo.
7164.
If the trunks to Buffalo were busy, then there was always Albany.
5182.
And if Albany was busy, White Plains.
9141.
Now, on a really busy day like Christmas, the Atlanta trunks to the northeast might be so tied up that Atlanta might end up sending the call to its own regional center, Rockdale.
4041.
At that point, the call would proceed from Rockdale, which would still have the same basic choices. Rochester first, assuming it had trunks, then Buffalo, Albany, White Plains. So on Christmas morning, if you were trying to reach Rochester, New York from Atlanta, things could get so busy that the call would only progress to the next link in the homing chain at every point along the way, putting you through 5 different tandems before finally...
I'm sorry, but due to heavy Christmas calling, we are unable to complete your call at this time. Will you try again later, please? This is a recording.
7164.
What can I say? It's Christmas. But thanks to the recording ID, we can tell exactly where our call failed. Buffalo. Now, in this hierarchical system, Class 5 referred to the end offices that gave you dial tone, and that hopefully, if your call completed, you'd end up reaching. Recordings in Class 5 offices did not follow any particular pattern.
The number you have reached is not presently assigned to any customer. Please be sure you have dialed correctly. This is a recorded announcement.
Usually there was no numerical ID. However, occasionally some were used.
Please hang up and dial your operator. This is a recording. 1-6.
Please consult the operator for assistance. This is a recording. CT-33.
Please check the number or try your call again. 5-3-8-8.
This is a recording. 6-9-4-1.
714-52G.
This is recording number 3156552.
There was no one convention for recording ID numbers on end office or Class 5 office recordings. However, if you were lucky enough to get your recording from the Autochron Company, you might have it voiced by either John Doyle or Jane Barbie, who would give the prefix, the area code and the prefix, or perhaps the name of the town.
I'm sorry, the number you have reached is not in service at this time. If you need assistance, please hang up and dial your operator. This is a recording. 675.
This is a recording. 904-236.
This is a recording in Asheboro, North Carolina.
Since the hierarchy did have 5 levels, you might erroneously assume that the Class 5 end offices always homed on a Class 4, but that was only true in rural areas. Actually, in city and suburban areas, a Class 5 or end office, the office that would give you dial tone, would home on a Class 3, or a Class 2, or even a Class 1. Examples of this would be the 2 phone lines I used to record the centralized intercept tape in February 1977. My west side phone line was served out of a crossbar 5 that homed on a Class 3.
21249.
My east side phone line was served out of another crossbar 5 that homed on the great double sectional center of New York.
2122.
2123.
Which, of course, was Class 2. And then when I went to Atlanta, my phone service came out of the Trinity Step, which homed on a Class 1, Rockdale.
4041.
So each long-distance tandem, be it Class 1, 2, 3, or 4, had Class 5 end offices homing on it directly. And in most cases, each Class 5 or end office would have only one long-distance tandem that acted as its gateway to the rest of the world. However, in New York City, more than one gateway was typically used from crossbar 5 offices, and that just made it all the more interesting. So, if you're the kind of person who likes geography, you probably can understand why we found all this interesting. It did make a very unusual map. If you compare the map of the long-distance network to, say, the map of all the state capitals, the long-distance network is a little more interesting because, just for example, the state of Michigan would have 2 capitals, one in Detroit,
3132.
The other in
Grand Rapids, 6162.
And each of those capitals, sectional centers, is part of a different region. Detroit belongs to Pittsburgh,
4121.
Grand Rapids belongs to Norway, Illinois,
8151.
Meanwhile, the state government capital of Michigan, Lansing,
5174,
was just a tributary to Detroit. Well, enough about routing for now. And this is an ironic way to explain routing, because I've just used the recordings that you would get when calls failed to explain how calls went through. 2:30. Anyway, to continue the irony, let's go to the next section, where I'm going to put the long-distance network through the paces for you with the tape running, and you'll get to hear the sounds of the rings, voices, and other stuff. The clicks of the call setting up, which I'll later let you in on what the clicks mean, because you can actually tell the switch type by the way it clicks. The irony continues because I'm using centralized intercept, again a call failing, to demonstrate the long-distance network working. But beats the heck out of calling random people and trying to strike up a conversation. So in the next part, we'll actually make some calls to centralized intercept from New York City.